This weekend starts right after this.
When shopping for car insurance, consider this. Geico has been saving people money on car insurance for over 75 years. So if you're serious about savings, it's simple. Go to geico.com. After 75 years, they know how to save you money.
Compass Media Networks. This is America's First News. This weekend with your host, Gordon Deal.
Another glaring technology weak spot. I'm Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koshenka. Glad you're with us. Here's what's coming up this hour.
Hundreds of thousands of inexpensive webcams, like ones in a small business, are easy to hack and use to attack the internet.
How to spot when a car rental company is trying to upcharge you with things you don't need.
With another big weekend of March Madness upon us, a look at the psychology of where a team is seated in the tournament.
And how about a fantasy camp based on your passion for singing and dancing?
Well, there's a group of Broadway veterans who have basically decided to do what we've seen being done with baseball, with rock and roll, basically this whole idea of a fantasy camp experience, and they're doing it with Broadway.
Wall Street Journal staff writer Charles Passy on a fantasy camp for Broadway. He's here a little bit later in the hour. Well, there's a mini tradition that may be developing in South Florida involving President Trump, and that's for his supporters and detractors to set up camp on opposite sides of the Southern Boulevard Bridge to his Mar-a-Lago resort. They spend hours signaling cars, shouting at drivers, and waving campaign-type signs. Caitlin McGlade, a reporter at the South Florida Sun-Sentinel, says it's a regular weekend activity for some South Floridians. She spent some time with them. Caitlin, what'd you experience?
If they love him or hate him, there were just dozens of people who have made it sort of like a weekend tradition where they go and they stand along Trump's motorcade route between the airport and Mar-a-Lago, and they hold up signs. And so I noticed that on there's a bridge that goes between the mainland and where Mar-a-Lago is, and a lot of his supporters were on that side of the bridge. A lot of the protesters were on the other side of the bridge. They were sort of separated in that way. But there were also some Trump supporters on the other side as well. Essentially, kind of what I saw was that I talked to a lot of people who spend hours. It's become a weekend tradition. They spend hours out there. They've made friends as a result of this. They do it Friday. They do it Sunday. Anytime they think the motorcade is going to be passing by, they are kind of dropping what they would otherwise do in their normal lives and collecting signs, hats, and flags and whatnot and bringing them out there and either waving at the motorcade or turning their back on the motorcade.
Boy, there are some definite differences. Boy, this is the one woman who says she supports Mr. Trump because he stands for America first. She's out there with flags and hats. And then there's the other guy who says, listen, I've seen it. This is the beginning of a dictator.
Yes. They all kind of said they were out there for similar reasons. I think, like I said in the story, they all said they were out there for solidarity, or they were out there for their kids, or they were out there because they were doing what they thought was right. But they had very opposite viewpoints of President Trump, obviously. So on the protesters' side, a lot of them were talking about how they felt that the president doesn't see them as real people, whereas the people on the pro-Trump side, on the other side of the bridge, were saying, oh, he's one of us, he gets out, he talks to us, he waves at us, he really makes me feel like he's on our level. And so that was interesting as well.
Wow. We're speaking with Caitlin McGlade, education reporter at the South Florida Sun-Sentinel. She's written a piece called Trump Gets View of Divided America from His Mar-a-Lago Motorcade. Even kids in on the action, did you find?
Oh, yes. There was one little girl who was, I want to say, about 4 or 5, and her dad told me that she's always talking about how much she loves Donald Trump and how she's at school all the time talking about it. And she came out, and she comes out, he said, every single weekend, Trump is here. She is out there with her dad wearing a princess dress. That day she was wearing a princess dress. I don't know what she wears on other days. But she really wants to hang out there and wave hello to the president. And then on the other side, I ran into an 8-year-old boy who was out there with his parents in protest. He was there because he said he was afraid of his future with regards to what some of Trump's policies are.
Wow. There's even like a, at least it seems from your story, like a picnic type atmosphere that could break out at times.
Yeah, so the protesters had a park picnic, and they were much further away from the bridge to Mar-a-Lago, but kind of up by the highway there's this park, and they had a guy playing guitar, and he was singing "This Land Is Your Land," and they were eating snacks out of Whole Foods bags and just kind of enjoying the weather. Whereas on the other side, I didn't see any snacks, but they definitely had a camaraderie growing. And like I said, one of the women I talked to said she's probably spent all of 40 hours total out there on the bridge, and so she's made friends because of it. And it's sort of like a social gathering around the motorcade, if you will.
Thanks, Caitlin. Caitlin McGlade, reporter at the South Florida Sun-Sentinel. It's 12 minutes after the hour. The powerful performance and incredible battery life of new Dell PCs with Intel Core processors empower small business employees to do their best work wherever work takes them. Dell's U.S.-based small business advisors and price match guarantee mean you'll always get the best deal on the right solution tailored to your business needs. Powerful PCs are just the beginning of a great partnership. Call 877-BUY-DELL now to contact a Dell Small Business Advisor today. That's 877-BUY-DELL. A wave of inexpensive webcams, thermostats, and other internet-connected devices are hitting the market, many of them carrying just minimal safeguards against remote hacking. Hundreds of thousands of these machines already host malicious software, and the owners don't even know it. Now, as a result, the internet is constantly under attack, making websites harder to defend. Wall Street Journal reporter Drew Fitzgerald says the vulnerabilities are an open secret in security and technology circles, but there is no consensus on what to do about it. Drew, what's going on here?
Yeah, well, so I spent a little while tracking down some of the devices that security researchers had been infected with viruses. And the reason that a lot of these viruses are damaging to the internet, I don't know if you remember, a few months ago, there were a lot of websites that were knocked offline for a lot of people for a long time. These sorts of cameras, routers, other boxes in your home or office are often used in attacks that will hurt other things on the internet and make them unavailable. It's at a huge cost to businesses, a huge nuisance, and it's becoming a growing problem.
So these things are like an indirect source for attacks?
A lot of times they're the direct source of the attack. If you're a criminal or just a hacker looking to have fun, you can infect a lot of these devices. The security on many is very poor, and basically turn them into your personal foot soldiers and a personal army that can be used to attack any website.
Wow. Why is the security so poor?
Well, a lot of people in the electronics industry will tell you that a lot of these devices are years behind in terms of security. They're kind of where your home desktop, PC, laptop was 10 to 20 years ago. The processing power on a lot of them is extremely advanced. You can do more and more things. Your microwave, refrigerator, anything can be connected to the internet. And a lot of the device makers have said that they've essentially hooked them up to the internet first and are only thinking about security second.
So explain what happened as you lead off the story with this security camera in this laundromat in Colorado.
Sure. Well, this laundromat is one of literally hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of devices that have been found to be possibly infected with a virus. I started by finding a couple security researchers who had a list of internet addresses that were found to be scanning other devices on the internet for new victims to attack, and through a few methods traced back the source of that activity to, again, a laundromat like any other business that needed a security system connected to the internet so the owner could see the video feed while she was away, and unbeknownst to her the whole time had been used in possibly other online attacks, certainly scanning other businesses and homes for new boxes to take control of.
Wow. We're speaking with Wall Street Journal reporter Drew Fitzgerald. He's written a piece called What's Attacking the Web? A Security Camera in a Colorado Laundromat. How do you know if a device like this is even infected?
Well, that's the other tough part. It's very hard to know at all. A lot of times the devices that are infected keep working as usual without the user being any the wiser. But you can tell if your device is vulnerable to this type of attack. A lot of them are infected simply because they're connected to the internet, they don't have a strong firewall, and they have default passwords. So if you buy a router or a webcam or anything else from Best Buy and you install it and it doesn't tell you to create your own username and password, you should do that.
With some of these devices, then, if you find you've been infected and perhaps you are able to learn that it was because of a weak password, once you reset your password, is the problem solved?
A lot of times the problem is solved. Now, there are all sorts of different versions of this malware, this software that can infect devices. So there's not any one-size-fits-all approach. But if you create a custom password and, again, have a strong firewall around your home or small business, which either the router maker or your internet provider should be able to help you set up, you can usually be sure that most of these low-level viruses are not going to be able to reach your device.
Okay. So is the advice then, say if you're like this woman in Colorado, a laundromat owner with a security camera, does it make sense to call a security pro as part of the setup just to make sure everything's on the up and up?
Yeah, although in a lot of these situations, you shouldn't be lured into spending more money or buying something that you don't need, when a lot of times the simplest steps, especially with home routers or security systems, is, again, call the business that set it up for you in the first place. This the security system was installed by a professional who, when notified of it, took immediate steps to try to fix the problem. And if you're just a home user who bought a new router and brought it home, or a webcam, you should be able to contact the company that installed it and either look in the manual, look online for their tips, or call their support line to make sure that they have steps in place that can update it automatically and that can allow you to change the username and password.
Thanks, Drew. Wall Street Journal reporter Drew Fitzgerald. 22 minutes now after the hour on This Weekend. Take a look with us. Ever feel like something's just not right? When you're renting a car, there's a good chance you're onto something. Here's This Weekend's Jennifer Koshenka.
It's called the Sign Here scam. You reserve a rental car, and when all is said and done, it costs you a lot more than what you expected. How can you protect yourself? Consumer advocate Christopher Elliott joins us now with some tips. Christopher, how are car rental companies hitting us with so many extras we didn't really want?
Well, it's easy, really. The cost of your car rental doesn't really cover all of the car rental company's expenses and doesn't allow them to make enough profit. So they had to figure out some way of making more money. And the way they do that is by adding extras, so-called ancillary charges, and they try to talk you into those when you pick up your car at the car rental counter. And one of the ways that they are able to essentially dupe you into taking these ancillary charges is to slide a contract under your nose with an agreement that you're going to take these extras, and even if you don't want them.
And most people at the car rental counter are in a hurry to get somewhere, and they're not reading them, right?
That's exactly right. Well, this plays into the whole psychology of buying and of upselling. That's what they call it, upselling. If you're at the car rental counter, they know, number one, you're in a hurry to get to your destination, and number two, you're not going to read very carefully or at all. So they can basically put anything in front of you, and you'll probably sign it.
Let's talk about a couple of those extra fees. Upgrading to bigger cars, how are they making us take something we didn't really want?
Well, they're asking you vague questions like, wouldn't you rather have a Mustang instead of the Pinto that you reserved? And I'm exaggerating a little bit. No one is renting Pintos anymore. But and then you're saying, yeah, well, yes, I would not like to drive that little sub-compact car around. And then they print you a new contract, and you're agreeing to a $20 or $30 or $50 a day extra fee for that specialty vehicle that you thought they were just giving you out of the kindness of your heart. Of their heart, I should say.
Right. What about insurance? A lot of us are already covered by insurance, but they want us to take theirs.
They know that you don't know what's in the insurance policy. They also know that you probably don't know that your credit card that you made the reservation through covers your rental. And so they're playing on those doubts. They're saying, are you sure you're covered? And if you're not covered, this is what could happen. I mean, I was at a car rental counter in Anchorage not so long ago, and they started showing me pictures of damaged cars. And they said, this person had to pay $11,000 to have his car fixed. Do you want that to be you? And it was a real heavy sell. They wanted me to buy their optional insurance, and I just kept saying no.
Yikes, that sounds a little crazy. Christopher, what can you do to fight back?
Well, you can just say no. And the first thing you can do is read the contract. I mean, take the extra 3 minutes and read it. If they're giving you a contract in another language, which happens when you're traveling overseas, ask for a translation in English or ask someone to translate the contract for you. But don't not read the contract, because there are things in there that you're agreeing to by signing it that you might not necessarily know about. And the other thing is to just keep saying no. No, I have the insurance. No, I don't need the upgrade. No, I don't need the GPS. No, I don't need the insurance. Did I already say that? Just say no to the insurance. You're probably already covered, by the way, through your either credit card or through your car insurance.
Are there advantages to joining frequent renter programs?
There can be. I mean, if you like collecting points and miles, but remember that with a car rental company, they're going to actually charge you for those miles. So I would probably say no to that.
That's this weekend's Jennifer Koschenka with consumer advocate Christopher Elliott. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Weekend. Hey, it's never too early to talk about wine, right? Specifically, Cameron Hughes wine. I've been a fan for some time now, and the price and quality can't be matched. You see, Cameron has relationships with these high-end wineries and producers all over the world, where he sources his wines, then sells directly to us for much less than what we'd pay under the usual labels. It's how he's able to offer luxury wines at an affordable price, and Cam guarantees all his wines. If you're not happy with any of them, you send the bottle right back. He'll fix it. Right now, he's got an exclusive offer for our listeners, too. Free shipping on your order and a free sommelier-grade corkscrew. It's a great deal to try wines that are already up to 50% off at Cameron Hughes Wine. Free shipping and your free sommelier corkscrew at chwine.com. That's chwine.com. Then enter my code DEAL. It's a limited-time offer. It won't last. Again, chwine.com and enter the code DEAL. chwine.com and code DEAL. Well, in the early rounds of the NCAA tournament, like, you know, when the field was just at 64 teams and getting started and there were 16 games a day, the teams usually play on neutral sites. Most of the arenas have a lot of empty seats. Without fans, the noise void is typically filled with the sound of squeaking sneakers on the hardwood floor. But what actually makes that squeak? New York Times sports writer John Branch made his mission to find out. John set this up.
Well, you know, we all watch basketball games. We all hear the squeaks. I mean, it's part of the game. It's the soundtrack of the game. And just sort of a silly idea. Why do these shoes squeak? And so that's what I set out to explore. And I went and talked to a lot of scientists to try to figure out the answer to that.
All right, and the basics are what? What'd they say about an answer here?
Well, the basic principle is the scientific idea that's called stick slip. It's a scientific notion that it deals with friction, and what it means is that anything like if you think of like wipers on your windshield, when the windshield's not really wet, your wipers sort of stick, and then they move, they slip, they stick again, they slip again. It happens with squeaky doors. That's why our doors squeak. It happens even seismologists study this. It's why tectonic plates, they stick and then they flip, and that creates an earthquake. Mm. So it's a very well-known principle among engineers and scientists, and it's actually the same principle that describes what happens to the bottom of your shoes on a basketball court. Wow. You come to a stop, and the stop might feel instant, but it's not quite instant. What's happening is that the rubber on the bottom of your shoe is sticking and slipping, then sticking and slipping until you come to a stop. And what that is doing, I mean, not to get too scientific-y, too geeky here, but what that's doing is creating some vibrations on the bottom of your sole, especially on those herringbone patterns that we have on the bottom of a basketball shoe that compresses air, which then turns into a sound wave, which comes out as a squeak.
Wow. So there was an interesting example that one person gave, too, about the difference between the noise made by a sneaker on a basketball court versus why there's no sound when you wave your hand in the air. And that has to do with compressed air, because you're not compressing air when you move your hand through the air.
Exactly. I mean, to make a sound, you have to have compressed air. And when you just wave your arm through the air, you can't compress it. There's just too much air all around you. As he said, it's like sloshing water. You just, you know, you can't just do it fast enough. But if you have a small space, and if you think of this, like how kids might put their hands underneath their armpit to make a noise,
yeah.
Or if you put your palms together and squeeze them, you
right.
can sort of compress air and make a squeaky sound.
Yeah, yeah.
It's very much what's happening underneath your basketball shoe.
How come some basketball sneakers make minimal or no noise when others are really loud?
Yeah, it's funny. I talked to Leo Chang, who is one of the main designers at Nike, does all Kevin Durant's shoes, for example. He says they have come up with some shoes, some designs that don't really squeak. Most basketball players, especially NBA players, if they put them on and they don't squeak, they say, wait, what's wrong with this shoe?
Yeah.
To them, it's like an assurance that the shoe's gripping. So that it could be done. Most basketball shoes have that herringbone pattern, and that seems to squeak more than, say, like knobs that you might see like on the bottom of a running shoe. And it's because those little fins of the herringbone are what's vibrating.
We're speaking with John Branch, sports writer at the New York Times. He's got an interesting piece called Why Are Basketball Games So Squeaky? And he's looking at basketball sneakers, and there's an explanation here tied to the spiny lobster, because the lobster, what, has like a defense mechanism in which it causes a vibration and makes noise too, which you included in the story.
Yeah, anytime I can get a spiny lobster into a sports story, I feel like it's a win.
Right.
Yeah, it's interesting. There's a biologist, a pretty well-known biologist at Duke named Sheila Paddock, and she came up about 10 years ago with what at the time was thought to be the first instance in the animal kingdom of an animal making noise using the stick-slip principle. And the stick-slip principle is when you have two smooth things that rub together, and you wouldn't think they would stick or slip because they seem to be smooth. So some people get it confused with like what a grasshopper or a cricket does, where they're scraping something against like a washboard. And that's not what's at play here.
Okay.
But she found that the spiny lobster, which is one of the species of lobsters, does have basically the stick-slip principle at play when it tries to defend itself, tries to scare predators off. And that is, it uses a thing, a little knob underneath its antenna, and it scrapes it. It's kind of a rubbery little knob, and it can move it, and it can move it against its own forehead, basically, and it makes a squawking noise. It's very much exactly what's happening underneath your shoe.
Thanks, John. John Branch, New York Times sports writer. So when somebody points that out, right, just drop the spiny lobster analogy on them. It's 20 minutes now in front of the hour on This Weekend. Time now for a business update, and it's brought to you by the Michigan Economic Development Corporation. If you want to take your business to the top, take it to a top 10 state for business, Michigan. Contact michiganbusiness.org today. Apparently, it helps to carry yourself with a little swagger at the office. New research finds that cocky employees help their bosses make bank. Here's This Weekend's Mike Gavin.
We are on the phone with Katie Hill, editor of Money-ish, a brand new website about money. And the story is called Hiring a Bunch of Jerks Helps Companies Make Way More Money. Katie, why don't you tell us about this research?
Big sigh, because the last thing you want is your coworkers to be jerks. But yes, workers who are overconfident can actually help companies increase their profits. And the reason is people who think they're far more productive, you know, those people, I guess we can call them arrogant, they think they're a lot more productive than they are. They're actually less likely to quit. And as you probably know from previous studies, quitting costs companies a lot of money because they got to train new employees and they have a bunch of hiring costs. So yeah, overconfident, arrogant workers are actually less likely to quit their jobs.
So you're not actually more productive, you just think you are, and that's a good thing for some reason.
You're not actually more productive, you just think you are, and that somehow motivates people and they don't quit their jobs. Now, this study just looked at truckers who actually get paid more when they drive more. The people who thought, oh, well, I'm going to drive 500 extra miles than they actually end up driving, but they were significantly less likely to quit their jobs. But, you know, it's not really hard to imagine that this could apply to other fields. You know, people who think, oh, I'm going to, you know, earn more money if I stay. I mean, you could just imagine and this could apply to anyone, but it was just looking at truckers.
I think the amazing thing about this from a business perspective is that what it tells us is that hiring costs are actually more important in some cases than productivity when it comes to hiring people.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. Like, you're exactly right with that comparison, right? The hiring costs are so significant. They have to train you, they have to hire you, all of that. Those costs are so significant that the small, you know, uptick in productivity for a single employee, it doesn't outweigh that.
You know, there's always those one or two people at work, maybe three or four, and we always wonder how those people are still employed. Now we know why those people are still employed.
Right. They got right. They're a little bit, maybe the word is arrogant. This was interesting, too. A survey came up from last year, but I thought this was particularly interesting. You're wondering, of course, where you're going to find the most arrogant workers. Number one is private chefs. 74% of them think they are the best performer at their company. That's followed by CEOs, which may not surprise you as much, and then art directors, who are right up at the top of that list.
So creative professions, perhaps, near the top of those lists? Breeding more jerks than other professions?
I'm not going to answer that, being that I am in one, but you might be right.
This weekend's Mike Gavin with Katie Hill, editor at moneyish.com. It's 14 minutes now in front of the hour on This Weekend. A group of professional performers has launched something called Broadway Weekends, a New York program that aims to give amateurs the chance to be a star, at least for a few days. Wall Street Journal staff writer Charles Passy says, move over, baseball. Broadway now has its own fantasy camp. Charles, what'd you find?
Well, there's a group of Broadway veterans who have basically decided to do what we've seen being done with baseball, with rock and roll, basically this whole idea of a fantasy camp experience, and they're doing it with Broadway. They're inviting people to spend a weekend essentially in New York. Cost is $420, and you learn a little bit of how to sing, how to dance like a Broadway professional, and by the end of that weekend, you put on a show. Maybe not a full show, but you put on a portion of a musical and friends and family are invited.
Wow, I would imagine, you know, given all these reality singing programs on TV, this has been something in the works. I mean, where's it been?
Yeah, you know, when I heard about it, I almost thought the same to myself. I thought that something like this is overdue, but in fact, nobody has done it till now, and I can't really offer you a reason why, but I would agree that this has been the kind of thing that, I mean, Broadway itself is booming. You know, there's now an annual Broadway convention for fans. Ticket sales are at a record pace for like something like the umpteenth straight season. And, you know, so Broadway is booming, and then there's all these kind of singing shows and all that. So you would have thought this would have happened by now, but it took a group of performers, and I should mention, these are not the biggest names on Broadway, but they're all Broadway veterans. It took a group of performers with a little bit of time on their hands to say, why don't we do something like this? So so I would say I think they're on to something.
Wow. All right. So could it be for somebody who's never even tried to sing before, or do you expect to have some sort of experience?
Been very specific about that, and I think they're trying to see who they get. I would say that right now, anybody with $420 has a good shot of doing this. And they're not promising anything of the sort that this will be a launch pad to anything else. This is simply a chance to have fun for a weekend. You know, I imagine over time it could evolve into something that would be a little bit more, you know, they may have more applicants than they have spots, but right now I think if you've got the money and the interest, you know, you're in. But, you know, obviously, you know, I think if you had no singing or dancing experience, you might struggle, because I you know, it does sound like people who have some background in it are vying to go to this.
Wow. We're speaking with Wall Street Journal staff writer Charles Passy. His piece is called Broadway Fantasy Camp Planned for Adults Who Want a Star Turn. I presume you get a little DVD of your work at the end, too?
They didn't say anything like that. What they said is that friends and family are invited. So I think hopefully friends and family are invited to the final performance, and that they can tape, you know, for you. But no, I mean, I would say right now it's a fairly bare bones operation. You know, I might add that I was kind of shocked to find how big the fantasy camp industry is. And you know, I mean, we do know obviously about the baseball fantasy camps. I think a lot of people are aware of the rock and roll fantasy camps. There's fantasy camps for virtually every pastime. There's a rodeo fantasy camp. Some people say it's something like a $3 billion a year industry of grown-ups going to these adult camps. So, again, as I say, I think these people are on to something.
Thanks, Charles. Wall Street Journal staff writer Charles Patsy. $420. No promises, though, that you're on a path to stardom. It's 6 minutes now in front of the hour on This Weekend. Glad you're with us. For the teams in the NCAA tournament, the psychology is all about expectations and performance, and one can certainly affect the other. The biggest factor in all of this, a team's seed. SportsEdge.com says where a team is ranked affects its collective mindset going in and can have an impact on expectations and subsequently performance. Southern Connecticut State University psychology professor David Kemmler says it's often a disadvantage to be a heavy favorite at the beginning of a tournament. Sometimes our expectation, he says, of success is unrealistic, so those teams tend to play down to their level of competition. The underrated team or the lower-seeded team may take a nothing-to-lose attitude, so the fear of failure would be lower, translating into more what they call optimal level of arousal. Some individuals hit that optimal level, but most in pressure-packed situations are either over-aroused, meaning that too much effort is being exerted, while others are deactivated and are putting forth too little effort for success. That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koshenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Weekend. The powerful performance and incredible battery life of new Dell PCs with Intel Core processors empower small business employees to do their best work wherever work takes them. Dell's U.S.-based small business advisors and price match guarantee mean you'll always get the best deal on the right solution tailored to your business needs. Powerful PCs are just the beginning of a great partnership. Call 877-BUY-DELL now to contact a Dell small business advisor today. That's 877-BUY-DELL.